Hi, I'm so happy to be here. It's almost like things, I don't know, it feels like things are coming together because Gwen knows me from the MTSO and Steve from Regent College, which is like amazing. And then Rachel, and Joel and Rachel's parents, who I never met, but of course is the connection with Joel. It's like, wow, this is like great. It's amazing. And I'm very, very pleased to be here and honored too. And I want to give you a welcome greetings from Columbus Mennonite, where my husband, Joe Moss, who's right there, and I have been attending for about 15 years, right? Actually, I'm actually an ordained Presbyterian minister, believe it or not. And every time I say that at Columbus Mennonite, and I go, I'm not really a Mennonite, they go, yes, you are. So, yeah, okay. So I seem to have all my bases covered. But in my 20s, I was a spiritual but not religious person. My parents had been of two different religions, and they decided to raise me without any religion at all. So I grew up knowing very little about religion, except what I could pick up from friends and family. As a result, I didn't hate religion or the church. I just thought it was irrelevant, just completely irrelevant. Instead, I found spiritual nourishment in nature. I didn't think too much about why I loved the outdoors. I grew up in New Jersey, and I just knew that as a kid, I loved playing in the ocean waves and lying on the warm sand at the beach. I mean, I loved it. I was the happiest there. And then as a young adult, I loved hiking and bike riding. I loved being outdoors, but I just took it for granted. Now, something changed for me when I was in my mid-20s. I had been working as a newspaper reporter, but I had become very discouraged by all the bad news I had to cover. So I took a leave of absence from my paper, and I started hitchhiking through Europe. A little crazy. I didn't bring much with me. I didn't bring too many clothes, not even a coat, money. I was, even when you're in your 20s, you do stuff like that, you know? And of course, as parents now, we would want to kill our kids that decided to do that, but I did it. So after a while, because I wasn't really prepared to do this, I was tired and I was broke. So I happened upon a Christian retreat center in Switzerland. I don't know if you've ever heard of La Brie, but that's where I ended up. Now, I didn't know anything about this place, but they said I could stay for free. That sounded good, but when I kind of got a sense that they were actually religious and Christian even, I told the leaders that I didn't believe in God, because I was also an atheist. Now, instead of kicking me out, one of them suggested I go outside and look at the amazing mountains, the Alps, all around us. And they said, while you're doing that, ask yourself how you think all of this got here. So to make a long story short, although you can read about it in my spiritual memoir, Bloomfield Avenue, A Jewish Catholic Jersey Girl Spiritual Journey. Bloomfield Avenue is a main street in Newark, New Jersey. That's where I'm from. Okay. So thanks to God's grace, I had a conversion experience there and came to know God's love. And I never looked at nature the same again. Once I realized that nature is God's good gift to us, everything changed for me. I began to feel so grateful for God's wonderfully artistic and generous gift. I finally realized why nature made me so happy. In fact, when I went back to the Jersey Shore and went swimming in the ocean, I realized why I had so much fun playing in the waves. It was like God was playing with me in the waves. I mean, God is really everywhere. So I began to understand that the earth is the beautiful and bountiful home given to us by God, and we should cherish and care for it. Now, all through the Bible, we're told this. For instance, we just heard in Genesis, God saw all that he had made, and it was good. And further on, we learn that God took the human and put them in the Garden of Eden to work it and care for it. Sorry, so it's whether, you know, are we here for the garden or is the garden here for us? Both. And that wasn't just in the beginning, because the Bible tells us quite often that God has put us all here to be stewards, to tend the earth as well as to enjoy it. And I know the Mennonite tradition is farming and, you know, being really good with nature, and so I very much admire that, because I'm a city girl, basically. So Newark was not, you know, we had like a tree. Somewhere on the street. Okay, so I was spiritual but not religious, but then I wasn't. But today, there's a lot more people that are spiritual but not religious than when I was young. I was a little unusual. And I bet you anything that you have some spiritual but not religious persons, I call them SBNRs, among your friends and family. I know I do. And many of the people that we know who are SBNR feel about the church and nature the way I did before I had a conversion experience. Now, I know this because I've interviewed hundreds of them all around North America as I was doing research for my recent book, Belief Without Borders, Inside the Minds of the Spiritual But Not Religious. So what I found was they don't hate the church. Sometimes we think they're hostile. They weren't. They just think it's irrelevant, okay? Which maybe is almost worse. And most have told me, almost all of them told me, that they feel more spiritual out in nature than in a church. Have you heard this? I mean, you know, they say, oh, I get more out of a sunset, you know. And, you know, as a Christian, you want to go, well, I kind of get a lot out of a sunset too, but okay. They can't explain why they love being at the beach, in the mountains, hiking or biking. They just do. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of you love nature too. And the Millers have a farm, right? So you're out there all the time, right? But we can't take our beautiful home for granted anymore. Things are rapidly changing. I'm sure you've heard the reports and realize we're on a limited timeline. It's very scary. Now, as far as I'm concerned, and maybe this is true of you, I've been concerned about climate change for a long time. I was first alerted to it in Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, and ever since then, my concerns have only grown larger and more troubling over time. But this fall, Joe and I attended the week-long Parliament of World Religions. There was some 10,000 people there representing religions from all over the world. It was a unique experience. It was in Toronto. One track was dedicated just to climate change. And we heard a panel from the Union of Concerned Scientists. And I was so impressed by what they were telling us that I became a member of the Union of Concerned Scientists. If you go on their website, you'll see they say recent reports make clear, and I'm going to quote from their website, that climate change is not some problem in the distant future. It's happening right now. They go on to say that, quote, our new climate reality is fraught with stronger hurricanes, polar vortex shifts, there was one in Ohio recently, recurrent high tide flooding, life-threatening heat waves, longer fire seasons, and more rain during heavy downpours. And they go on, and studies show that climate change is not affecting everyone equally. Low-income communities and communities of color, as well as indigenous people, often suffer most. They finish by saying, we have reached a tipping point on climate action. Scientists say we have roughly one decade left to avoid the most serious consequences of climate change. So this is serious. I didn't come here to make you depressed, but I think you already know about this, okay? But a hopeful note is that other very recent surveys, just a month ago, proved that a rapidly growing percentage of the population now understands this. Here's what an article in the New York Times said just a few weeks ago. It was citing a bunch of recent surveys which have gauged changes in public opinion. And so I'm quoting from the New York Times, some 73% of Americans polled late last year said that global warming was happening. A jump of 10 percentage points from 2015, and 3 points just since last March. The rise in the number of Americans who say global warming is personally important to them was even sharper, jumping 9 percentage points since March to 72%, another record in the past decade. And if you know anything about statistics, that's very amazing, something to rise that fast. So that's good, right? We should be relieved, right? I know, like my son goes, phew. Okay, we should be relieved, right? That so many of us are on the same page. Well, yes, but there's actually a wrinkle here. While such a large percent understand climate change is real and worry that it will affect them, only 6% believe that nations will be able to do anything about it. Only 6%. And that's not much, and that's not all. The surveys found that many people, in this case 1 in 5, say the real problem is us. Many said the main reason they don't think we can reduce global warming is because people are unwilling to change their behavior. So, many of us are participating in what's called the bystander effect. In other words, we're waiting for somebody else to do something about it. Now, yeah, there have been protests here and there, and, you know, Europe and here too, but we're not seeing this in the magnitude that we actually need. Instead, and this is where faith comes in, instead many people feel fearful, despairing, maybe even guilty. And as with any tragedy, the human impulse is to look away or to become numb. And it's easy to get numb with all this news we hear all the time, very easy. And so many of us, I bet, feel this way. Or we feel hopeless, or even cynical, like much of the public, convinced that nothing can actually be done about this. But here's where we should be different, because this behavior is very unbecoming to people of faith. A lot of times today, cynicism passes as wisdom, but cynicism is not wisdom, it's defeat. And despair, which I know many of us feel from time to time, it doesn't inspire action, it paralyzes. Even guilt and desperation don't motivate us in the face of such a huge problem. We need another motivator, hope. But it's a special kind of hope. It's not false hope or just Pollyanna, you know, well, everything's gonna turn out. It's a different kind of hope. Well, let's go back to the spiritual but not religious and see, and how do they see the church in the light of this situation? Hundreds of SBNRs that I've interviewed care deeply about the environment. I mean, a lot of them feel they get all their spiritual nourishment from the environment, from being outdoors in nature, hiking and all that. And they know that human action is essential, and they know that we have a limited time. But wait a minute. Yes, some are acting, but what they're really lacking is leadership, some kind of concentrated unity of leadership. Now, they know that human action is essential. They know all that. But what they don't know is that in the past, the church was very active in providing leadership to help fix serious social problems. The church was very active in working against child labor laws, creating child labor laws, against slavery, against sweatshops, and lots of other things that you could learn through studying history. Now, okay, there's some groups today like Interfaith Power and Light, and most of the major denominations, including the Mennonites, have written statements in support of creation care. But SBNRs don't know about this because these don't get a lot of publicity. Mostly when SBNRs look at the church, they see inaction. No wonder they feel the church is irrelevant. They don't believe we're doing anything about this huge problem. Now, get this. This is going to surprise you. In fact, they worry that our trust in God is actually part of the problem. Now, that might sound crazy, but let me see if you can understand where they're coming from, and I'll give you some examples. I think a picture I saw a while back sums it up really well, just a little video online. You know how there's always people taking pictures? Well, at the start of Hurricane Harvey that hit Houston in 2017, there was a video online. Maybe you saw this. I tried to find it again, but I couldn't find it. But I remember it distinctly. It made a big impression on me. It showed a man sitting on his car roof, and you could see the water edging up towards his toes. It was serious flooding there. You remember? I'm sure you remember. But even so, this man was holding a large white placard with big letters in black marker saying, "Don't worry, God has this." That sounds pious, but I think it's a problem. Because in fact, the hurricane got much worse, and it did tremendous damage. Now rescue workers helped, thank God for them, but the underlying problem, climate change, was still there. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't trust God. I'm trying to help you understand why SBNRs think the church is irrelevant. And this is only one of reasons. If you want me to come back and tell you more, I could come back and tell you more. But it's important, it's very important, because the SBNR population is growing exponentially. And I actually like statistics, and I could show you numbers on that. Okay, well, here's another example, or this is a metaphor. Okay, in fact, some spiritual but not religious see us like the couple in a movie a few years back. Did you ever see My Big Fat Greek Wedding? It's a feel-good movie, I really liked it. And if you remember at the end, at the wedding reception, the couple's parents give them an entire house for a present. I mean, they only owned a restaurant, so that was really generous, right? Now, the movie ended there. But let's imagine that this couple was full of gratitude to their parents and they really enjoyed the house. In fact, they were enjoying it so much that they didn't have time to keep it up. They kept throwing their garbage bags in the alley behind the house. They let the dust bunnies accumulate so much that they practically formed a carpet. And when all the dishes got dirty, they just began to use paper plates. And finally, when the roof started leaking, they said to each other, "Oh, don't worry, we'll just call Mom and Dad and they'll come over and take care of everything." Now, how would you feel if you know how you would feel if you heard about such a couple, right? And you really know how you would feel if they were your parent, if you were the parents. In fact, some of us probably have teenage kids where their room is like a toxic waste dump. I mean, my son was like that. And I know how I felt. I was not happy at all. Thank God he grew out of it. Okay, that's good. So that's how the SBNRs see the church as well as the rest of society. I mean, can you blame them? But Christianity has a different way of trusting God. It's a stereotype to think that that's how we trust God. We're not meant to treat God like a lenient mother who sweeps in periodically to clean up our mess. The Bible says we should no longer think and act as children. It says that once we put on Christ, we're meant to mature, grow up, act like partners, not slaves. So the kind of hope that SBNRs imagine we have is not really our kind of hope, waiting for a good God to clean up our mess. Now, earlier I said that Christianity promotes a different kind of hope. Of course, the Christian message is that there's always hope. That's what the resurrection of Jesus is all about. And the Christian, it's not just about eternal life, it's about hope here too. And the Christian message does provide an antidote to the understandable despair and fear and cynicism and paralysis that we all are tempted to feel in the face of climate change. So what kind of hope are we talking about? Well, hope is all bound up with faith. We're called people of faith. But what is faith? Actually, faith is hope. Faith is hope in things not seen. Faith is being open to new directions and divine surprises. Our kind of hope is using your imagination and vision to believe that things can actually get better with the energy and motivation that comes when we rely on God. Christians are people of hope. But the main thing is not hope for, but hope in. We place our hope in God's purposes for the world. But that's not passive hope. That hope is not passive. God calls us friends. And friends help each other. I often find myself praying, "God, tell me how I can help you, okay? Can I help you with this? Like, give me some ideas here, all right?" The world is groaning right now, as you heard in the passage from Romans. It says the creation is waiting to be liberated from its bondage to decay. It says the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth. God expects us to join in helping to fulfill the divine purposes of liberation and new birth. Yes, God is in charge, but we are God's team. We're God's emissaries and God's friends. We're like team compassion or team love. We have to be compassionate to the hurting world, just as we would be to our friends, our family, and even ourselves. We have to extend God's compassion to the groaning earth. Is this a huge job? Absolutely. Do we need God's help? Of course. And we also have to be open to God's grace. We can't be like the spoiled couple who expect God to sweep in and make everything all right. We're not like the guy. We shouldn't be like the guy on the car roof, in other words. Jesus explains that we are no longer slaves, but friends of God. We're partners with God. In fact, God has no other hands and feet but us, but ours. So even if what we do seems too little, too inadequate, it's essential that we do it. We have to start from where we are and use what we have. Now, as for myself, a lot of times I would feel guilty. Well, I wasn't an entrepreneur or a social activist who could, I mean, I do activist things, but I couldn't rally people. I just don't have that kind of charisma. I'm a professor. You know, we're not bent that way, actually. So I felt inadequate. But when we were at the World Parliament of Religions, I realized that I had to assess what I had to offer and realize what I had to offer was writing and speaking. And so that's why I'm here speaking on this to you today. I could have done a whole sermon on spiritual but not religious, but I decided this was more urgent, although that's kind of urgent too. In fact, I was particularly motivated and inspired by one important session I attended at the World Parliament. The Union of Concerned Scientists that I mentioned earlier had a panel in a big ballroom, and lots of people were there. It was very good. Now, we don't know if these scientists were religious or believers or atheists or SBNRs. It really doesn't matter. They came there. They made very clear that they came there because they said churches and religion in general, are major societal influencers. They asked us to lead the way. They asked us to live out of the hope we have. They're doing what they can. That organization's very, very active. But they want us to act too, not be like the guy on the car. So what kind of hope is Christian hope? I know Mennonites know this. It's a hope that acts. It's not a hope that demands results. It's a hope that stems from our confidence in God, and believe it or not, God's confidence in us to follow grace. This is a two-way street with God. We're not like little kids, like, Mommy, please, no. God is like, I'm sorry, I made you, you're my friends, you gotta act like big people now. That's what I hear God saying. So it's a hope that accepts the fact that when we become one with Christ, we become partners and friends with God. It's a big job, and we need to recognize that. Now, I'm not saying that you aren't involved. I bet you are. I find Mennonites really impressive. I mean, when I went into Columbus Mennonite one day and I found under the coffee urn they had taken a plastic Coke bottle and put it like over the spout so that it wouldn't drip on the rug, I was like, Mennonites are creative, man. That's good. It was recycling, but it was creative. Have you seen that? I was like, I'm always impressed when I see that, which I see all the time at Columbus Mennonite. So I'm not saying you're not doing your part. I'm sure you are. I mean, recycling, maybe you compost, maybe you try hard not to waste, maybe you've improved your diet, adding more plant-based foods, maybe you try to organize your errands so that you drive a bit less. Many of us try to do all this, and it becomes second nature after a while, which is very good. But we're going to have to step up our game. We're going to have to trust God, step out in faith, and live into the hope that God actually does give us. Despair and cynicism are faith killers. We can't afford that. I found myself, when that report came out recently about, 12 years, like, oh, good, 12 years, wow. Well, I was casting around. It was like a real feeling of like just being drowned, drowning in despair. And I was looking through a devotional reading, and I came across Psalm 34. And one of passage said, and I memorized it so I could always have it on hand, I sought the Lord who answered me and set me free from all my terrors. And I kept praying that over and over again, and it really did help a lot. And then I also realized that being proactive brings its own kind of hope. This week, Worthington, where we live, Worthington, decided to do a pilot program on composting food scraps. And there's a lot of wasted food. 40% of American food is wasted, restaurants and homes, right? So they sent out an email, would you like to join this thing? And so I joined it right away. And we went over to a container store and got a bamboo bucket, and then they'll give me a bigger bucket for the little one for the counter and then the bigger one. And I found that I used to always feel guilty when I had threw the eggshells down the garbage disposal and I knew I should be cooking the tops of the carrots but I didn't do it. And I find that I actually feel so much better. This is crazy. My husband's like, really? Well, if it makes you happy. But it does. I feel so much better. I'm not throwing all the extra things that we don't use, because we cook and we use a lot of vegetables. I'm putting them in there. And I'm like, okay, good. There's a tea bag. There's my coffee grounds. Excellent. They're going to good use. Isn't that better? And I just feel amazing from that. I know it sounds silly, but you have to start where you are. There's so many things that all of us can do. In fact, the Union of Concerned Scientists says the world already has most of the technology it needs to heal the Earth. It's already there. And they've laid out so many practical things we can do to reduce our burden on the Earth. And most of them, they say, would not even disrupt our lifestyles or cause us great discomfort. They're not saying go live in a shack without any heat or light. They're not saying that, okay? All right, so what are some of these things? Things like programmable thermostats, so you don't need to heat or cool a house while you're not at home. That's easy, it's not even that expensive. Things like more efficient vehicles, which they're starting to develop. You really save a lot, you really reduce your carbon footprint with that. Using more public transportation, which I realize is not a big thing out here. It's not even that big in Columbus. It doesn't work that well, but we need to urge our cities and towns to do a better job providing that. Things like energy-efficient light bulbs in our homes, not so hard. They last a really long time. Another idea that they said was very important was putting our electronics on power strips and then turning them off when we're not using them, because they drain energy even when they're turned off, as long as they're plugged in. I didn't know that. They urged us to replace old appliances with more energy-efficient ones, which, by the way, in the end, saves you money. How about putting the heat way down when you're sleeping? I mean, you sleep a lot better when it's cool. What about composting food scraps and yard waste? If you have land, maybe you already do this. But I was not doing it. I tried making compost, and it was a complete failure. I mean, it was just terrible. So I'm going to let them do it. I mean, I'm from Newark. What do I know about composting? Nothing. It just stayed the same. Like, the eggshells were still there a year later. It's like, I guess I don't know what I'm doing. Okay. They urged us to call or email our legislators to ask them to take this problem seriously in all their lawmaking, and that's essential because a lot of these things do require law. Now, you can find these suggestions and lots more, not only all over the internet, but I recommend their new book, Cooler, Smarter, Practical Steps for Low-Carbon Living. What I liked about the Union of Concerned Scientists was they didn't make us feel, I didn't feel in despair and in a panic. I felt like I can do things, all right? So most of these are essentially simple things. They take some initial effort, but you can understand them, and then they become a habit. All right, back to the spiritual but not religious people. Let's show the world that the church is not irrelevant. Let's show SBNRs that we know who created the world and we want to express our gratitude by taking care of it. Let's get out in front of this problem. Let's be proactive. Remember, as I said earlier, that important parts of the church were game-changing, crucial leaders in the past. Such things as the abolition of slavery and the suffrage movement, the church was really out in front. And even now, parts of the church are out in front showing love to all types of people, no matter what their gender orientation. Now, I know different parts of the church disagree. I mean, I work at a Methodist school, and if you heard the news, I mean, it was, you know, not good news. But there's one thing that we all know and can agree on. God asks us to go forward sharing God's love with everyone and everything. And I do mean everything, like the song, right? All God's critters, but everything, animals, trees, mountains, glaciers, everything. They all, God loves them, we have to love them. So let me tell you one more thing about what motivated me to come here today and preach this sermon. When I got back from the World Parliament, I was all inspired, and I contacted leaders in three local institutions where I live to see if I could help each group hold a teaching seminar on how we could reduce the effects of climate change. One person I contacted was the pastor of a large church. The other person I contacted was in charge of a local interfaith group. And the third person was a city library trustee, and I sit on the board of the Worthington Libraries. I was president last year, so I was in a meeting and I just brought this up. Guess what each of them said? I was shocked. Each of them said, oh, we don't want to get involved in anything political. Political? The earth is our home. If your house was burning down, you would not be asking the firefighters if they were Republican, Democrat, atheist, or whatever. You would not care, all right? It's our home, no matter whether you believe in God or not. The earth is not a political football. It's the only home we have. And as Christians, we know even more that the earth is God's generous gift to us. So let's show the world and God that we are grateful. Let's accept the biblical obligation to be good stewards of this good gift. Yes, it's going to be a big job, but we are people of hope. And there's not a lot of hope around right now, so we have that. We can't let ourselves be mired in despair. We can't let cynicism be disguised as wisdom. God wants us to be better than that. So think about this now, this week. What can you do? What do you have to give? At first I thought what I had to give wasn't very important, but then I thought, but it is what I have, so I'll give it. Let's rely on God's grace to energize us. Let's go forward in hope. Let's once again be the leaders, not the followers, not the bystanders. Let's not be cynical. Let's not be the cynical, the paralyzed, the despairing. Let's be the hopeful people of God. Amen.